Hello, this is Ian with the Pentagraph, dated Wednesday, September 13th, 2017. We'll start today's reading on the front page with the article headlined "Normal Community High School Students Spread Rocks, Cheer in Uptown" from Julia Evelsizer in Normal. Amid somber news of devastation from hurricanes in the south and wildfires in the west, a group of students wanted to uplift the hearts of the Twin City community this week. A class of 17 Normal Community High School students used their creativity to paint cheerful images and messages on small rocks, which they spread through Uptown Normal Tuesday morning. At the beginning of the school year, we saw an article about the craze of rock hiding and how big it was getting not just locally, but nationally. We used it to teach students the idea of making others happy, said Normal Community High School teacher Angie Cardiff. She and NCHS teachers Amy Vasilak, Aaron Sanders, and Sherry McAndrews decided to include their class in the fun activity. The rock hunting hobby is popular with young families and has spread throughout central Illinois. Anyone can paint and hide a rock to be discovered and rehidden, or kept, by someone else in the community. Popular hiding locations are in public parks and along walking trails. If you can turn one person's day around by finding these rocks, they will spread the positivity, said Cardiff. More than 30 rocks were tucked against windowsills and nestled in flower beds along the sidewalk of Uptown. The group had a laugh when they passed the rock restaurant, where they left a few colorful stones. Junior Aisley in Bossard painted a panda, an emoji, and an M&M on her rocks. "I want this to brighten up someone's day," she said, and so it did. Shortly after the NCHS class swept through the Uptown streets, the Norris family discovered several of the stony treasures. Lynn Norris of Hudson was leaving a ballet class with her children Vivian, 6, Buddy, 5, and Violet, 2, when they spied and rehid a few rocks. "Uptown is loaded with this morning," posted Norris on the McLean County Rocks Facebook page, with a picture of Buddy gleefully showing off his discovery. Norris said her kids have been rock hunting all summer and are keen to find more anytime they're out and about. Normal Parks and Recreation Department hosted a rock scavenger hunt over the summer, posting clues of where the stones were hidden and awarding prizes to the family who found them first. "All of my kids loved finding plain rocks they thought were cool in the first place. When they started finding painted ones, they thought it was even cooler because they were pretty, and they realized someone else had painted them and left them for someone to find," she said. When she learned of the meaning behind the rocks placed by NCHS students, Nora said, "I think that is such a kind and thoughtful thing to do. I hope that they know they are achieving their goal of spreading happiness." The remaining rocks designed by the class were given to Normal-based Midwest Food Bank to be packed among the disaster relief boxes, which will be shipped to survivors of Hurricanes Irma and Harvey. "I hope when people see them, they think happy thoughts, and it brings them joy," said sophomore Trevin Davis. "It was super fun painting the rocks. I used black, yellow, and gray to paint Batman on one. Senior Jamie Fox composed a spaceship on one of his rocks. I want people to feel good, not be sad, and have fun while they look for the rocks," he said. "When you're happy, you feel more relaxed." We go now to the article headlined "Sorensen Receives Sentence for Fraud" from Edith Brady Lunny in Chicago. An apologetic Matt Sorensen was sentenced to 12 months and a day in federal prison Tuesday for a wire fraud scheme related to consulting work he did for State Farm. The former McLean County Board Chairman acknowledged his serious mistake that humiliated his family, friends, and the community he served as an elected official for more than 20 years. "I should have known better. I did know better. But I agreed to take it," Sorensen said of the scheme to submit false invoices for consulting work to McKinsey & Co., a Chicago consulting firm that did work for State Farm. Several of Sorensen's relatives and supporters wiped away tears as he read his statement to the judge. The group of about 20 filled most of the seats in the courtroom. Sorensen, 51, declined to comment after the hearing. His lawyer, Stuart Channon, said, "We're pleased with the sentence." The judge took the whole person into account and the service Matt provided the community over many, many years. Sorensen admitted he took part with McKinsey staffer Nadeep Arora in the plan that cost the company about $490,000. Sorensen pleaded guilty in November to submitting false invoices to McKinsey & Co. for consulting work he did not perform for the Bloomington-based insurer, his employer for more than 20 years before he was terminated in 2012 after the fraud scheme was uncovered. Aurora also has pleaded guilty to wire fraud and will be sentenced on October 18th. U.S. District Court Judge Ronald Guzman ordered Sorensen to report to federal custody on November 27th. Both men are equally liable for $490,000, $475,000 in restitution to McKinsey. State Farm was repaid its fees by McKinsey, but the insurer was unsuccessful in its bid to recover almost $200 million related to the investigation into the fraud. In his comments, the judge recognized Sorensen's long history of public service. That record is a remarkably impressive pattern of community involvement, said Guzman. But the sophistication and duration of the fraud demanded time in prison, he added. These are pure choice crimes, committed by thinking people, who were not without the means for living a good life, said Guzman. In a sentencing memorandum filed last week, federal prosecutors asked the judge to consider between 27 and 33 months in prison for Sorensen. The defense, which asked for probation, denied that Sorensen provided confidential State Farm information to Aurora about the consulting contracts overseen by Sorensen. Rather, Sorensen befriended Aurora, who lied about his life circumstances to garner Sorensen's trust, Sorensen told the judge. But Sorensen is not the good man portrayed in letters of support provided to the judge, said Assistant United States Attorney Sunil Harjani. He's someone who is out for himself, said the prosecutor. Sorensen must serve at least 85% of the sentence. He will be on parole for a year on the felony conviction after he's released. We'll go now to the article headlined, Proposal to Move Library Lacks Support, from Maria Nagel in Bloomington. A proposal to use the site of the city's parking garage at Market and Monroe Streets as a new location for Bloomington Public Library and Connect Transit's downtown bus transfer station apparently lacks political support to move forward. The idea was raised during the Downtown Task Force's September 5th discussion about potential catalyst projects to reinvigorate the city's core, but aldermen gave it a cool reception at Monday night's city council session. After Ward 2 Alderman David Sage called the proposal into question, a majority of the aldermen again expressed support for expanding the library at its current site, at 205 East Olive Street, rather than moving it closer to downtown. Sage noted that during a joint meeting of the Council and Library Board of Trustees in June, 7 of the 9 aldermen and Mayor Terry Renner voiced support for staying at the current site near City Hall on the southeast edge of downtown. I am both confused and concerned that somehow a new direction is being moved, said Sage on Monday. But I believe that as we sit here tonight, a majority of the council still favors expanding the library where it is. Sage suggested that the council reaffirm the majority opinion so as to not enable and continue the turn that has come up around this topic. He and 4 other aldermen, Maboka Mulambabwe of Ward 3, Joni Painter of Ward 5, Karen Schmidt of Ward 6, and Scott Black of Ward 7, reiterated their support for the library expanding at its current location. I do know the parking garage needs to be redone downtown, and I'm all about having a bus transfer station in that building, said Painter. But I think after we have talked about the library being where it is for so long, and then to switch right now, I just don't think that's a good idea, and I think it's a big waste of money. The task force plans to discuss the issue further at its September 26th meeting, said Ward 4 Alderman Amelia Baragas, who heads the task force created in May to brainstorm ways to move redevelopment downtown forward. I think it would be a shame at this point to cut the process of discussing moving the library downtown, given it's grounded in our downtown strategy and comprehensive plans and looking at the bigger picture, said Baragas. The library board also plans to discuss the Catalyst Project proposal when it meets September 19th. I haven't heard much from the library board, but I think they are kind of waiting to have that discussion next week, said Library Director Gene Hamilton. I think that we're in the position where we really want to do what's best for the community, and part of that is working with the council. Hamilton attended the council meeting Monday. In light of that discussion, we might need to come back together for another joint meeting and have just have a discussion and say, okay, We're hearing that you want to stick with that decision and that direction made in June, said Hamilton. But what does that mean as part of the next step? What should we do to move forward? Ward 9 Alderman Kim Bray, who serves on the nine-member task force along with Ward 1 Alderman Jamie Matthew and Baragas, did not weigh in during Monday's council discussion. But at the task force's earlier meeting, she said the council and library board should be consulted to see if a majority favors moving the library to the parking garage site. Ward 8 Alderman Diane Hellman was sick and did not attend Monday's meeting. At the joint meeting in June, Baragas and Matthew favored moving the library closer to downtown, but Matthew added he also would accept expanding the library at the current location. Making the library expansion the Downtown Catalyst Project provides better potential for funding by the city, Baragas contends. For a bit of national news, we'll now go to the article headlined, High Court, Refugee Ban Can Continue, from Mark Sherman at the Associated Press, in Washington, D.C. The Supreme Court is allowing the Trump administration to maintain its restrictive policy on refugees. The justices on Tuesday agreed to an administration request to block a lower court ruling that would have eased the refugee ban and allowed up to 24,000 refugees to enter the country before the end of October. The order was not the court's last word on the travel policy that President Donald Trump first rolled out in January. The justices are scheduled to hear arguments on October 10th on the legality of the bans on travelers from six mostly Muslim countries and refugees anywhere in the world. It's unclear, though, what will be left to the court to decide. The 90-day travel ban lapses in late September, and the 100-day refugee ban will expire a month later. The administration has yet to say whether it will seek to renew the bans, make them permanent, or expand the travel ban to other countries. Lower courts have ruled that the bans violate the Constitution and federal immigration law. The High Court has agreed to review these rulings. Its intervention so far has been to evaluate what parts of the policy can take effect in the meantime. The justices said in June that the administration could not enforce the bans against people who have a bona fide relationship with people or entities in the United States. The justices declined to define the required relationships more precisely. A panel of the San Francisco-based Ninth U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals upheld a district judge's order that would have allowed refugees to enter the United States if a resettlement agency in the U.S. had agreed to take them in. The administration objected, saying the relationship between refugees and resettlement agencies shouldn't count. The High Court's unsigned, one-sentence order agreed with the administration, at least for now. The appeals court also upheld another part of the judge's ruling that applies to the ban on visitors from Iran, Libya, Somalia, Sudan, Syria, and Yemen. Grandparents and cousins of people already in the United States can't be excluded from the country under the travel ban, as the Trump administration had wanted. The administration did not ask the Supreme Court to block that part of the ruling. We will continue now with the obituaries. Glenn Brad. Glenn Colvin Brad, 93, of Bloomington, formerly of Saybrook, died on Saturday, September 9th, 2017, in his home. His funeral will be at 12:30 p.m. Thursday at Carmody Flynn Funeral Home in Bloomington. Visitation will be from 5 to 7 p.m. on Wednesday at the funeral home. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be directed to Bloomington Normal YMCA. Melissa Cromie. Melissa A. Cromie, 27, of Bloomington, formerly of Sounaman, died on Sunday, September 10th, 2017, in Peoria. Visitation will be from 4 to 6 p.m. Friday at Calvert and Martin Funeral Home in Pontiac. Memorials in Melissa's name may be made to a charity of the donor's choice. Jeremy Hamblin. Jeremy Edward Hamblin, 41, of Urbana, formerly of Downs, passed away Saturday, September 9th, 2017. His funeral will be at 4 p.m. Thursday at Ellsworth United Methodist Church in Ellsworth. Burial will be at Friends Cemetery in Benton. Visitation will be from 2 to 4 p.m. Thursday at the church. The family suggests memorials be made to his family in care of his father, Gordon Hamblin, at 307 North Chestnut Street in Leroy, Illinois. Alma Hasselbrock. Alma J. Hassebrock, 99, of Saybrook, passed away on August 25, 2017, in Pontiac. Her visitation will be from 11 a.m. to noon on Saturday at Calvert Belanger Bruce Funeral Home in Saybrook. Burial will be in Riverside Cemetery, Saybrook. Memorials may be made to Emmanuel Lutheran Church of Ozman. Marvin Roth. Marvin W. Roth, 82, of Fairbury, passed away on Monday, September 11, 2017. His graveside service will be at 11 a.m. Friday at Gridley Cemetery. Visitation will be from 5 to 7 p.m. on Thursday at Duffy Pills Memorial Home in Fairbury. Dorothy Sprague. Dorothy Sprague, 80, of Moroa, passed away on Sunday, September 10, 2017. Service will be at 10 a.m. on Friday at Moroa United Methodist Church in Moroa. Burial will follow in Moroa Cemetery. Visitation will be from 5 to 7 p.m. on Thursday at Calvert Funeral Home in Clinton. Memorials may be directed to Moroa United Methodist Church. Ruth Weber. Ruth M. Weber, 80, of Bloomington, passed away on Friday, September 8, 2017. Her Mass of Christian burial will be at 10 a.m. Friday at Holy Trinity Catholic Church in Bloomington. There will be no visitation, and a celebration of Ruth's life will follow Mass at the church. Marvin Roth. Marvin W. Roth, 82, of Fairbury, passed away on Monday, September 11th, in El Paso. His graveside service will be at 11 a.m. on Friday at Gridley Cemetery. Visitation will be from 5 to 7 p.m. Thursday at Duffy Pills Memorial Home in Fairbury. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be directed to the Alzheimer's Association or Domini Memorial Library in Fairbury. We'll now head to the local section for the article headlined, ISU Ranked 83rd Best Public University, from Lenore Sabata in Normal. Illinois State University dropped slightly in the rankings among national universities, and Illinois Wesleyan University moved up one notch among national liberal arts colleges in the latest Best Colleges Rankings by U.S. News and World Report. The Best Colleges publication, released Tuesday, includes information on more than 1,800 colleges and universities, and rankings for nearly 1,400 of them, divided into four categories: national universities, national liberal arts colleges, regional universities, and regional colleges. ISU is ranked 83rd among the best public universities, down from 78th a year ago, and 159th overall, for both public and private schools, down from 152nd last year. National universities are those that offer bachelor's through doctoral degrees and emphasize research. Despite the dip in rankings, ISU President Larry Dietz said he was happy with ISU once again being in the top 100 among national public universities. "Anytime you can be in the company with the elite, it's good," he said. IWU tied for 71st among national liberal arts colleges, up from 72nd last year. National liberal arts colleges focus on undergraduate education and award at least half of their degrees in liberal arts fields. Also ranked were Peoria's Bradley University, 7th among Midwest regional universities, and Eureka College, 26th among Midwest regional colleges. Many publications issue national rankings, but U.S. News tends to draw more attention than others because it uses a lot of objective criteria, such as graduation and retention rates, class sizes, student-faculty ratios, alumni giving, and standardized test scores, in addition to surveys of administrators and high school counselors. About 32% of classes at ISU have fewer than 20 students, and its graduation rate of 72% exceeds the national average of about 60%. Though we know that rankings are only a small piece of the Illinois State story, the report reaffirms that our excellence is celebrated by more than Redbird family and friends, said Dietz. One change this year in the methodology for ranking national universities focused on the proportion of degrees granted in the fields of science, technology, engineering, and math, commonly referred to as STEM. "We do okay overall, but we don't have engineering," noted Dietz. Another area that hurt ISU's score was the percentage of applicants that it accepts. ISU admits a higher percentage than some, quote, more selective schools, and under the criteria they use, U.S. News dinged us a little bit on that, said Dietz. Its fall 2016 acceptance rate was 89%. Dietz considers the acceptance rate to be a sign of a good enrollment management program that attracts the right applicants. Even though ISU is accepting a higher percentage of applicants, our academic profile remains the same, he said, referring to the grade point averages and standardized test scores of those who are accepted. The University of Illinois in Urbana-Champaign ranked 14th among public national universities and 52nd overall. Next, the article, ISU Panel, Trump Violates Norms, Not Constitution, from Lenore Sabata, in Normal. President Donald Trump may be violating political norms, but he isn't necessarily violating the Constitution or abusing executive powers, a panel of three Illinois State University professors agreed on Tuesday night. Speaking on the Trump presidency and executive power, the professors of politics and government covered topics from Trump's travel ban and actions on immigration to his pardon of former Maricopa County, Arizona Sheriff Joe Arpaio and firing of FBI Director James Comey. Associate Professor Megan Leonard said the stumbles Trump has made thus far are a demonstration of what political noviceness gets you. But she added that some people like that he doesn't follow the norms. Trump's chief of staff, retired Marine General John Kelly, could change that as he brings more order to the White House and controls access to Trump, according to Professor Lane Crothers. "What happens comes down to a battle for the soul of John Kelly," said Crothers. "And if Kelly succeeds, you'll see President Trump emerge into a somewhat normal president. But Trump has to want to change for that to occur," he said. The panelists disagree on why Trump waited more than 7 months into his term to suspend former President Barack Obama's Deferred Action on Childhood Arrivals, or DACA, executive order. Associate Professor Thomas McClure said, "I think he struggled with the issue," noting he has at times expressed support for those who were brought to the United States as children, but also has to appeal to his base of support. But Leonard called it the action of a political novice. McClure thinks Obama exceeded his power with DACA in the first place, while Leonard said it can be seen as using his power to tell bureaucracy how to enforce the law. "It costs a lot of money and resources to deport people," she said. Whether the Supreme Court upholds Trump's travel ban will depend on whether justices see it as an exercise of foreign policy, for which the president has broad powers, or a violation of the religion protections in the First Amendment, the panelists said. As for the pardon of Arpaio, who has been found in criminal contempt of court for ignoring judicial orders to halt racial profiling, all three agreed that the presidential power to pardon is broad. "The pardon of Arpaio is an abuse of the law, but it is within his power to do so," says Crothers. Leonard said even though it was legal, the pardon was not a good idea. "This is a blatant attack on the judiciary," she said. "He has not quite figured out the balance between the executive branch and the judicial branch." Crothers said, "There's nothing unique about a president coming in and struggling at the beginning. He thinks there is one thing on which leaders in both parties would agree. If they had one wish granted to them, it would be that Trump's tweeting device be taken away from him." Now the article, Blagojevich is Optimistic, from the Chicago Associated Press. More than 5 years into his 14-year sentence on corruption convictions, Rod Blagojevich, who once held the highest office in Illinois, finds himself on cleaning duty at a Colorado federal prison. "I've been given the jurisdiction to sweep and mop two floors," he said in an interview with WMAQ-TV in Chicago from prison, released on Monday, along with an interview in Chicago Magazine. "So my jurisdiction has shrunk from the fifth biggest state in America to these two floors. But I don't care what anybody says. I believe in clean government, and I believe in clean floors." Blagojevich still maintains his innocence and hopes to make another appeal to the U.S. Supreme Court. The 60-year-old reported to prison in 2012 after he was convicted on several counts, including for trying to sell former Barack Obama's U.S. Senate seat. The former governor is now housed in a lower security section of the prison and said he spends time running on the prison track, working out in the weight room, and reading. His fellow prisoners gave him a care package when he first arrived, he said. "You walk in there on the first day, and your heart's broken," he says. "You're in there, and then they close the gates on you, and you're in prison. And you're yearning for your children, and your wife, and your home, and you're yearning, and you're looking at 14 years. Blagojevich sees his family on average 3 times a year. "What sustains me during this very difficult, long, hard trial is the love I have for my children and my wife, Patty," he said. Blagojevich said he is optimistic about the future. "Even if the world misunderstands you, criticizes you, and say you're crazy, take a stand," he said. "Because you know what the truth is, and when you do it, my experience tells me, trust in God." Now the article, "Red Cross Postpones Fire Safety Campaign," from Paul Sweek in Bloomington. American Red Cross is postponing its fall Sound the Alarm, Save a Life campaign to install 100,000 smoke alarms in homes nationwide while the agency focuses on its hurricane relief operations. "This was a difficult decision to make, and it is not a cancellation but merely a pause as we focus our efforts on providing the best possible care to those affected by the devastating hurricanes and flooding," Trish Burnett, a communications director for the American Cross Central and Southern Illinois region, said on Tuesday. The campaign installs the smoke alarms, free of charge, in homes nationwide from September 23rd through October 15th. Red Cross volunteers also would use home visits to help families develop escape plans so they could get out of their homes in less than 2 minutes if there is a fire. The campaign would have meant the installation of 700 smoke alarms in the Bloomington, Normal, and Peoria areas, Red Cross Regional CEO Lynn Herska said during a campaign kickoff announcement on August 15th at the Bloomington Fire Department headquarters station. Most of the installations in the Twin Cities were to be done September 23rd. The Bloomington and Normal Fire Departments support the effort because most people who die in home fires were in homes without smoke alarms. "Sound the Alarm" is a valuable and life-saving initiative. However, right now, the Red Cross needs to focus its resources on supporting the tens of thousands of people affected by these devastating disasters, Burnett said in a prepared statement. Red Cross Central and Southern Illinois region has deployed 90 volunteers and staff to Texas and Louisiana since Hurricane Harvey hit on August 25th, and 12 to Florida to assist with Hurricane Irma relief. 27 of those volunteers and staff are from Central Illinois. Some smoke alarm installations may continue in Central and Southern Illinois in a limited way this fall, and Red Cross will continue to install smoke alarms by appointment, Burnett said. Anyone interested in making an appointment may call 844-319-6560, extension 9, or go to www.getasmokealarm.org. Red Cross will announce its plans for the Sound the Alarm later this fall. We will now take a short break and return with the second half hour of The Pentagraph for Wednesday, September 13th, 2017. Please stay tuned.